From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. Ahead of the August 26th primary election, we're exploring an issue concerning just who can vote in certain races. A voter-approved amendment to the state constitution added nearly 16 years ago is intended to keep primary elections open to all voters when only candidates of a single party have qualified to run. But according to the State Division of Elections, a last-minute write-in candidate can close such primary races. We'll explore how this loophole could impact some state house elections this year and past legislative efforts to change the policy. Plus, more than 65 million Americans serve as caregivers for a family member or loved one, and that number is expected to increase in the coming years. Learn the symptoms of caregiver stress, some coping techniques, and where to turn for help here in Southwest Florida. First, this news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for being with us. More than 65 million Americans provide care for a family member or loved one, and according to the Mayo Clinic, that number is on the rise. These unpaid caregivers can include those caring for a spouse with Alzheimer's disease or another form of dementia, someone caring for an aging parent, or even parents caring for a disabled child. While the work of these caregivers can be rewarding, it can also take its toll in the form of stress and fatigue on the often overlooked care providers who can be prone to neglecting their own health and well-being. For the rest of the hour, we'll be exploring the signs and symptoms of caregiver stress, coping strategies for caregivers, and where to turn for help. Joining me in studio is Patrice McGrath. She's a managing member and financial officer for McKinney Home Care based in Naples. She's conducted a learning session on this very topic on Tuesday. Patrice McGrath, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be here.
Also with us is registered nurse and health education specialist with the Alvin A. Dubin Alzheimer's Resource Center in Fort Myers, Mary Frere. Thanks for being with us as well.
Thank you for having me.
And lastly, we're joined by a healthcare liaison and research educator for the Neuropsychiatric Research Center of Southwest Florida, Angel Duncan. She's also an art therapist and public educator who travels the country consulting, teaching, writing, and lecturing on topics related to caregiver stress and the role of art therapy. Angel Duncan, welcome back to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you for having me.
I invite our listeners to join the conversation as well. You can connect with our guests with a phone call to 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Post comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media or join our live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. And Patrice, I wanted to start with you. I mentioned earlier that 65 million Americans provide care for a family member or a loved one and that number is expected to grow. Do we know why the number of informal unpaid caregivers is on the rise?
Well, probably because of the aging population. And somebody has to look after folks as they age. And inevitably, as we age, ailments arise. And people go into the caregiving role little by little with all of the best intentions. Suddenly, mom isn't managing her meds properly, or dad appears to be a fall risk, and, oh, I'll just step in and help out a little bit with this. And what they don't realize is they're actually stepping onto a very slippery slope. And the average caregiver who starts down that road ends up caregiving for at least 3 years. And over that period, they end up giving a good 19 days per month in caregiving.
Wow, that's a lot of unpaid care right there, but also a lot of stress that can add on to them as well.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
I was going to say the average caregiver is a 46-year-old woman, I'll point out, who's working outside of the home. So when you talk about 20 days of caregiving for a 46-year-old woman working outside of the home, something has to give.
Right. And Angel Duncan, you had said you had brought in some statistics with you as well. Are my numbers accurate, or is it perhaps
you're
a bit
right
worse?
On. No, you're right on. It is 65 million. And 2013, according to the Alzheimer's Association Facts and Figures, 15.5 million specifically for Alzheimer's disease, with 17.5 billion hours of unpaid caregiving that would be equivalent to 220 billion.
Wow. And Angel Duncan, I know that with the Neuropsychiatric Research Center of Southwest Florida, there's a lot going on in terms of clinical trials, but that's just part of the scope of what goes on there. Tell us about your role within the center.
I am one of the clinicians there, so I see patients that come that are interested in just finding out what their baseline is. We do free memory screens. Everything we do is a free service at the research center. So we see we let people know their baseline, depending on where they're at. We give them suggestions on where to go from there. Nobody leaves our office without having something in their hands of a resource or referral that they can go to and what they need to be doing. We have about 10 different studies of treatment and diagnostic. You're getting a $10,000 workup for free. Dr. Fred Sheriff, a neuropsychiatrist from Johns Hopkins, has been here about 20 years. Incredibly ethical, moral, and high standards. I think that Southwest Florida is incredibly lucky to have this research center here.
And when we had spoken on the phone the other day, you had mentioned doing an evaluation regarding a caregiver, and the stress had actually caused them to think that they might be experiencing cognitive issues themselves.
We have lately, we've been pretty slammed, which is good. We care that people care about their brains. I've been seeing quite a few people that call and come in for a memory screen because they think they may have Alzheimer's, and it turns out that they're just stressed. And most of the time, they're caring for somebody who their mother or husband is the one who should be in the studies, not them.
Right, right. Well, let's talk about some of the signs and symptoms of stress that are pretty typical of caregivers. Do you want to give us maybe some general ones, Mary?
Some of the things that we see absolutely are a lack of sleep. Once they start becoming sleep deprived, then they start having some memory issues themselves. They can't remember where they put things. They can't remember their appointments. They forget where they're going as well. And they think, oh, my goodness, I'm getting dementia as well, when it's actually just a lack of sleep. Then on top of that, you start having a decline in nutrition. They don't eat the way they need to eat. And once they start losing their ability to eat well themselves and feed themselves well and stay hydrated, then we see a shift in their body as well. Then we start seeing things like increased blood pressures or heart palpitations or just decreased overall generalized health. And all that starts adding up on the caregiver. They may have more emotional issues that they don't normally have. The caregiver may have more outbursts toward their loved one. Depression seems to hit very hard. So that's what we help with also with the caregivers at the Alvin Dubin Alzheimer's Resource Center, is helping them with support groups and helping them through those issues.
I've also heard social isolation is common.
Yes, social isolation. At the beginning stages, all the way through, and even we were talking about this earlier out in the lobby, even after a loved one passes with Alzheimer's disease, the caregiver still has a stress up to a couple years, 3 or 4 years after the person's passed. They still go through depression and sleepless nights and guilt and all the things that they go through through grief. So just because someone passes on and the caregiver's left behind, they still have a tremendous amount of stress that they need help with.
And Angel, can we talk about the guilt? Like where does this come from, and why is that something that you see a lot? Folks feel like they're not doing enough, even when they're doing way too much, and they are reluctant to ask for help.
Guilt is one of the highest emotions felt, I think, by caregivers, and then anger and depression and sadness. And guilt is just, I have so many people that feel guilty because they're angry. I have people that constantly come in sobbing, saying, I didn't sign up for this, and then feeling guilty because they said that, feeling guilty if they leave the house because they want to do something for themselves. I should be taking care of my loved one. I need to be there. And it's very demanding and very hard to try to care for somebody, that you love and care about, but then also caring for yourself. And then there's this guilt, and then I'm taking care of myself. So it's a matter of not what you have to do, but what you need to do. And I'll have caregivers that will say, I went to the movies. And I'll say, that's great. And they'll go, yeah, and I felt guilty the whole time.
Yeah.
I was there. So you're just like, so you have to build up into maybe taking 30 minutes, going out for a walk and clearing your head, taking an hour and building up too. And every time you keep thinking about why you're guilty, thinking about, I need to take care of myself, or what would your loved one say to you? They would want you to take care of yourself. So you're kind of constantly have to challenge those negative thoughts.
Right. Well, I wanted to read a comment that we'd received on Facebook from a listener named Elizabeth. She writes about her own experience as a caregiver. Totally uprooted my family. Mom is slowly declining both physically and mentally. Words that come to mind: patience, frustration, emotional, anxiety, compassion, anger, loneliness, abandoned, guilty, and strained. These are how both my elderly mom and I both feel. This is a learning lesson for me and my family of four, now five. Placing her in a home is not an option. Thankfully, my husband, daughter, and son are understanding, willing to learn and assist me with mom. Is that a pretty common story? Everybody seems to be shaking their heads.
Yeah, and I'd like to point out that the stress, the emotions that people feel, this long list of very difficult emotions, does cause a great degree of stress, and that becomes chronic stress. And Angel and I were talking about this in the lobby, that science is now showing that chronic stress is very real, and it actually alters the effectiveness of cortisol to regulate the inflammatory system. And the research is also showing that once the inflammatory system has gone awry, you are vulnerable to many different kinds of diseases, which then take on a life of their own. So while people feel like they're going crazy, in fact, they are.
Yeah.
I mean, they are. This is a real physiological response. It's not something that you have to say, oh, I just can't handle it, there's something wrong with me. No. There is a biological response taking place because of the chronic stress. And this is where we feel it's very important to educate caregivers, especially family caregivers, because they're taking this on without the knowledge that they actually are at risk of very serious health events themselves as a result of their caregiving. We know what the pathway is going to be for the patient. We know what the diagnosis is and how it's going to end. When you're a family caregiver, that pathway is unclear. And depending on your own biology, you could have a real health event related to this chronic stress that's induced by your caregiving role.
And Patrice, you had mentioned earlier that, you know, a pretty considerable percentage of folks who are caregivers are working outside the home as well. Where do you turn to for help?
Well, that's a good question. And the first thing is being willing to turn for help, because when you get into this period of stress, often what happens is you are stuck in some sort of rigid thinking where you're in a box and you just say, there's no other way. I have to do it. I have to do it. I have to do it. And so becoming a problem solver is the first step. Stepping out, asking family, friends, your healthcare professional, your doctor, your local caregiver association, social workers. There are lots of home health agencies, and we work with caregivers all the time in relieving them of their stress. There are plenty of resources out there, but it's a matter of stepping out of your rigid box, which is a natural response. Once again, it's not something to feel bad about. It's a natural response to the, you know, upset in the hormonal level that occurs as a result of the stress. So reaching out for help and getting out of that cycle of negative thinking and rigidity is going to be the best thing someone can do for themselves and for their loved one.
Yes, go ahead, Angel.
She's right on. The thing of it is, it's like you finally do step out, and a lot of people do, but then they don't accept the help. You can finally reach, get out, and then when somebody offers to help, no, it's okay. I don't want to burden my neighbor. So that's a hot one too. So the key is you have to not only ask and step out, you have to accept it. And I keep saying have, it's actually need. You need to accept it, because you have to find that respite. So or getting out of the mindset of nobody can take care of my loved one better than I can.
And Patrice, how does McKinney Home Care help in terms of, you know, caregiver stress? What is the scope of services involved there?
Well, we're a private duty home health agency, so we provide services, everything from companion service, which could be, you know, taking somebody to their doctor's appointments, driving, helping with their meals around the house, providing respite care, to the home health aides that provide activities of daily living, hands-on care for the patients themselves, all the way to RN. We're licensed to go all the way to skilled services, so we have RNs working in people's homes as well, private RNs. So we provide the whole gamut of services. Plus, our philosophy is the patient is a whole person and the family is included in the package. And so we develop a relationship with the family in order to help relieve the stress of the family. We become an extension of the family.
All right. And at the Alvin A. Dubin Alzheimer's Resource Center, just in terms of helping the caregivers, what goes on there?
Well, we mainly focus on the caregiver. And what we do is we have two master-level licensed social workers, Karen Jellerson and I just totally went blank. Thank you, Jessica McDonald. Sorry, Jessica. and myself. And what we do, the social workers do one-on-one counseling, which is really important. They also run 18 support groups through the different counties, from up in Charlotte County to Lee County, all over. That their groups are usually full of people who are just coming in to get support, which then in turn connects these people with each other, which gives them an outlet, which is really, really helpful. And they share stories and they share how things worked for them, what didn't work for them. Also with us, we the social workers have a long list of referrals through the community, whether it's through medical, through its research, through respite, whatever that they need, the caregiver needs, they work on helping that caregiver. If they have an emergency respite, let's say the caregiver has a heart attack or they have fallen, break their hip, and they need an emergency placement for their loved one, they can call us. The social workers find a placement for that loved one. I do the education piece. So far, I work with the professionals in the community, but also run a group called the Savvy Caregiver, which is out of the Rosalind Carter Institute, which teaches the caregiver how to care for themselves. Yes, you're involved in learning about the disease process that your loved one's going through, but how do you survive that? And by taking care of yourself, that makes you a better caregiver for them and your person's healthier. We're also starting a new program with an occupational therapist who is going to be coming in from Nurse on Call. That is going to brainstorm with caregivers, listen to what their needs are. What is it that they need? What difficult behaviors are they having at home? And what is it that the occupational therapist can teach them skill-wise that they can then go back home and try with their loved one? Because once we see that the caregiver can get that skill level down or get some of the skill levels down, it may not be 100% all the time. It could just be 10%, which is better than no percent. Once they get some of those skill levels down and get a little more idea of where their loved one is in the disease process, their stress level comes down. And once their stress level comes down, everybody's stress level starts to come down and they start getting a little healthier and can handle it and make better decisions for their loved one.
Angel, do you think that there's something about being a caregiver for someone with a cognitive disability or a dementia or Alzheimer's that makes it particularly more stressful? And I'm thinking about just in preparation for this program, articles I was reading about husbands caring for wives who no longer recognize the person caring for them was their spouse. I mean, just heartbreaking. And it just seems like it would be different than perhaps caring for someone in a different sort of situation.
It is. It's quite stressful. And a lot of caregivers have referred to it as living small deaths every day because the person doesn't recognize who they are anymore. Or a loved one is in a facility and the wife comes and the husband's introducing his wife to his wife, a person, So, yeah, the person's lost their judgment. I mean, this is your brain. This is the most sophisticated organ you have, and you're losing it. And it's painful because you've had a 50-year relationship with your loved one, and all of a sudden everything's just changed. Mm-hmm. They don't know your name. They don't know who you are. They're confused. They can't help with cooking. And then there's the role reversals. You may have a husband who has never had to do the cooking or the chores before, and now they have to take on those responsibilities. So there's a lot of grief and a lot of transitions. And I do think that, when you have a cognitive impairment, you can't talk to them. You don't have the same kind of relationship. It is changed and it is painful. But the good news is that because we're human, we can adapt, and it is transitions, and you can connect with your loved ones through different ways. So these windows do open, and so you still can have a shared experience.
We're exploring the often overlooked issues of caregiver stress this morning with Angel Duncan, or this afternoon, rather. Angel Duncan of the Neuropsychiatric Research Center of Southwest Florida, Patrice McGrath with McKinney Home Care, and Mary Freyer with the Alvin A. Dubin Alzheimer's Resource Center. You can connect with our guests with your comments or questions, or share your own caregiver stories. Phone line is open at 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. Find us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. And we had talked a bit before about, the profile of the typical caregiver, and you had said most of them work out of the home. I was surprised to read also, or maybe not surprised, but that they're predominantly women, too. Do you find that to be the case?
60% are women.
Why do you think that is? Is it just more male spouses tend to get dementia or Alzheimer's than women? Or?
Well, ironically, it's more common in women.
Hmm.
And yet women are the one who carry. I mean, if you're thinking about it, it's usually, wives are adult. It's usually the adult child and usually the adult children. It's the daughter.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Talking about support groups as well, getting out there and with folks who can also empathize with what's going on. Is that something that the Alvin A. Dubin Center offers, the support groups?
Yes. We have 18 support groups. The social workers run the support groups, obviously, and which is nice. They can bring a different level, just a little more educational level to with the support groups. And then also, like I said, I run some programs that take the caregiver on a 6 weeks course that kind of gives them more of a medical view of what dementia is and how to relate to their loved one. I kind of help them step back a little bit emotionally as much as I can, at looking at their relationship and looking at it more of a, as from a medical viewpoint, which kind of opens their eyes up to, wow, wait a minute, I'm not just dealing with an emotional thing here. This is an actual physical thing that's going on in the brain. And it's been really successful. We've got a running waiting list for that program. So, yeah, support groups are phenomenal.
Angel, we've got a few minutes left here. And last time we spoke on the program, we were talking about, arts and medicine and art therapy. Is there a dimension of that that can impact caregiver stress?
There's a huge impact, yeah. Everybody may be familiar. It's been winning all these international national awards called Alive Inside. Eric Raddatz from the Fort Myers Film Festival was able to secure that movie, and we sponsored it at the Research Center and put on the Barbara Bree Mann. And it's just amplified. It's in theaters now, but it talks about the beauty of music reawakening the brain. And caregivers are anybody is going to, we're talking about caregiver stress. I think everybody's stressed out, but music can just really affect how we feel. And there's, this movie is fantastic because it actually shows people living at home and putting on some music, and it's like they're dancing, the affect's brighter, there's a carryover. A lot of research now is looking into why is it that music is tapping into it? What's going on in the brain? And Dr. Sheriff was interviewed on the Music and Memory Foundation blog, scientifically showing how your brain reacts in a PET scan on music. And it's just really fascinating. And then art. As an art therapist, I do use art. There's a great movie called I Remember Better When I Paint that we also sponsored and screened at the Alliance and in Naples. And showing how people reawaken to just art. And I think with music and art, you have these deeply coded memories that you are able to tap into so that you are able to remember and recognize. And Dr. Sheriff, as far as we know, right now he's been interviewed in Boston and New York. He is prescribing music as treatment. We have people that come into our studies that may not qualify for our studies, where they're not going to leave empty-handed. He tells them, you put on some headphones, that's better than anything on the market right now.
Yes.
So it's, and the art, the music, whatever, but there's something to that. And I started, Raina Lombardi and I started a Artful Minds program at the Alliance for the Arts.
Yeah, full disclosure, I participated in that. Okay, go ahead.
That John graciously did and played the cello. And it was fantastic. We're going to be doing it again in September, so let me know if you're interested. But John played the cello, and just for example, we had people from Shell Point that were sitting there, and this one man had his head down, and as soon as John started playing, he popped his head up and just started singing. Do you remember that?
Yes.
It was really awesome. So there's just so many fantastic things that are going on, and the beauty about research and where I'm at is that we are looking for effective treatments because we need them. We are breaking the bank right now, and it's going to only get worse. We're talking about all the feel-good things, which, yeah, we need to talk about, but the reality is, yeah, we need expressive arts to do all this stuff. We need to find effective treatments as well. We need both.
All right. Well, we are about out of time for today's show, but I want to thank my guests, Patricia McGrath with McKinney Home Care in Naples, Mary Freyer, Health Education Specialist with the Alvin A. Dubin Alzheimer's Resource Center, and of course, Heather Duncan with the Neuropsychiatric Research Center of Southwest Florida.
Angel Duncan.
What did I say?
Heather.
I'm sorry. I apologize. Thanks to my producers, Richard Chinqui and Ashley Lopez. This is WGCU Fort Myers 90.1 FM, WMKO Marco 91.7 FM.